This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
There yet on stoppage time.
All right.
As we come up on our 100th show pretty soon.
We need like weeks. La Bomba like yeah. sign over here.
Or yeah, or like one of those sirens.
Flashing
I mean, it's not a major shock or anything. Luis Fernando of Atlanta United 2 has signed his first team contract. I don't have the details in front of me. I don't know if it's effective January 1st. I would assume it probably would be.
It could be now. And Jimmy, pull that up so we
they
can
do
make
have
sure
a spot.
They do
have a spot open. So I guess I should not assume that.
Let's get that. I think it is a big deal for a couple of reasons. It's the first player signed from Atlanta United 2 to a first team deal. He came in on an Atlanta United 2 deal this year, started his professional career in Richmond. Was a player that we saw last year in the USL Championship at the end of the season, and he was one that stuck in my mind when the signing happened. I'm like, oh yeah, he stood out to me for Richmond. He's went from day one here to now, and I think you saw it on Friday night with the assist he had to Jackson Conway. Great ball from the wing. He can play out wide. I think he can play as a wing back in this 3-5-2. He's played a little bit of that with Atlanta United too. He can play inside as an attacking central midfielder. He can play as a forward. He's very versatile. He's a hard worker, scrappy. I think he's a player that could make an impact. Not immediately, and it's going to take him a minute, but he's a good piece to have around.
Frank's obviously very high on him. He's talked about him a lot. They kept him with the team, even though they didn't give him a number or a shirt even. But he and George Campbell were in the dressing room. They were a part of everything last Wednesday at the Campione's Cup. They want to get guys like Campbell and Fernando a little more integrated into the first team, at least in that way, even if they don't play.
It's a big deal because it's another avenue to recruit players because we've seen homegrowns come out of the academy and sign first-team deals. This is another way where there's a young player in the world and you're not quite sure they're ready for that MLS deal yet. They come into Atlanta United 2. They perform. They're going to get training time with the first team. We know that. And then they're going to move up. That's a great progress.
He's on the team. It's not a fact. I'm looking at the club email right now. He's on the team right now.
You have the spot.
So you have the spot.
He got a lot of on the right side.
I'm kind of thinking of where he might fit in here. You know, have they done this before the Emerson Hyman signing, you would think Fernando would have a really good shot to play.
I think they see him out wide a little bit more. I think he could be that we've talked about the cover for Gressel and Escobar. If he's going to be a center back, all right, then who is the right wing back cover? I think it's Luis Fernando.
Yeah. Good for him. Good for him, and congratulations to him. And congratulations to Glassy as well for getting him to this point. And that's a big achievement for Glassy. And for the USL team. The scouting department's just killing it right now.
To go get him from another USL team and see him in play and say, we like what this guy brings to the table, let's bring him into our system and get him to this point, that's a great achievement for the club.
Yeah. Okay, so that's our first piece of news here on Stoppage Time. We're going to talk about the Portland match now. I was in the process of tweeting, but we have to start the show. You know, Doug has tweeted that he's got something coming on the no call on the incident with Pitti in the 44th minute on Sunday.
That's a good tease from Doug.
Yeah, and look, if you've heard me and the call that I made, I thought it was a penalty, obviously. I think it was shambolic that it was not. I think you agree with me, Jason.
Yes.
I think pretty much all of us wearing Atlanta United glasses saw it as a penalty. Do not be shocked. I don't know what Doug has. Do not be shocked if Howard Webb comes out and supports the decision. Do not be shocked. I don't know how they're going to do it, but I have a feeling in the pit of my stomach that Pro is going to come up with something to justify the way it was handled. And I have two issues with it. Number one, it wasn't called anything live. When it looked like, it even looked like a borderline dog so red. And now I understand it could not have necessarily been a dog so red, but it could have absolutely have been a penalty. a dog so yellow.
Yeah.
So that's one aspect of it. The other aspect, too, is they did check it, but the check was awfully fast. And I'm wondering what went on in the VAR room. Alex Chilowitz was running VAR the night after he was in Vancouver, running VAR in the Vancouver DC match. It really bothers me, and it's very, very frustrating to me because Pitti gets this reputation as someone who tries to fall down a lot and draw calls, and then when he legitimately goes down and should earn a call, his reputation, which might not even be justified, is hurting him.
Yeah, I mean, the week before, they come out and say, yeah, we messed up here. It should have been a penalty.
Yeah.
And then a week later, now we're back to, oh, he falls down too much. No. When you look at that one play out, the thing about the dog so part, I want to make this clear because it creates a lot of confusion because the rules have changed, but they haven't changed the way that I think everybody thinks. So in the past, dog so, red card, no matter what, if it's a penalty, fine. It's a penalty, it's a red card, it's the suspension afterwards, it's all of it. They decided that that's a little too harsh. And if you're trying to play the ball, you get away from the red card on a penalty. Go back to, I think it was Brad Kazan against Sporting Kansas City last year,
yes,
where it was dogso, but it was outside the 18. And now, that one
was
a red card.
He was sent off,
but it wasn't
a penalty.
That's right. What changes it.
Right.
Now, some people would argue that that was violent conduct and would have been a red no matter what, which this one I don't think did. I don't think he raked the back of the leg or anything like that.
Let me go back to another one.
Yeah.
The Andre Blake in Philadelphia last year on, was it Almiron or Tito? I can't remember, but that was yellow penalty, not red penalty.
Right,
because
he tried to play the ball. If you pull a guy, then that's not playing the ball.
Okay, I was wrong. Howard Webb has rebuked the referee.
So let me get this straight.
Yeah.
Back-to-back weeks, Pitti Martinez should have a penalty in league play, and he doesn't get it. But he dives too much.
Yeah.
That's never happened before.
That's it? That's all he wrote?
That's all he wrote.
All right. I'm guessing more is coming.
Yeah, I would think so.
But quoting Doug, Howard Webb said, in his opinion, the penalty should have been awarded and recommended by video review. Which I agree with.
So, back-to-back weeks, huh?
Well, it's going to have to be addressed. And look, if you watched, I forget when they put this out. They did a little mini documentary on Mark Geiger. Actually, it wasn't a video. It was an article. It was a mini documentary about Mark Geiger and how he pukes before every game because he gets so nervous. And they have these briefings before that literally was in the article. Hey, hold on. Mark's going to go back and puke now. He's nervous. Mark Iger's a really good referee, by the way, and I think he has sorely missed this year.
There's
with some
athletes
of
who do that. There's rock stars who do that because, you know, you get nervous.
I puke before every broadcast. It's okay.
Really? I didn't know that.
No, I don't. Where was I going with it? Okay, so they wrote an article, and, you know, basically they embedded a reporter with the referees, and they're in the referee's dressing room before a match, and they're going through their notes. And actually, it was something that I found really, really worrisome, to be totally. And they're going through their notes. All right, Philadelphia is going for a playoff spot, so we expect them to play kind of chippy. So watch for this, this, and this. Which I don't like that, by the way. I think sometimes when you put things in your head, oh, let's watch for this, maybe you're a little faster to blow the whistle when common sense might tell you otherwise. But we know they have these meetings before matches. Are they, in these meetings, discussing, you know, number 10 there in white, we have notes here that, you know, some people think he's a simulator, so...
I have no sources to say yes, but I'll say yes.
Yeah.
I think they do. Because they talk. And
guess what? It's got to be scratched off the index card.
It should be.
It has to be.
Hey, he's out too.
Yeah, and look, did it affect the outcome of either match? No.
Nope.
But, Joseph's... in New York City, yes. I would say in Portland, you got the goal right after.
Right.
And honestly, I think the non-call fired them up to the point where they came out of the locker room or the dressing room pretty upset and went right down and scored. It did not affect the outcome of the match. One thing it does affect, though, is Golden Boot. Because if you assume that Joseph is going to go to the spot on both of those, he's three behind Vela right now. That's two. And Vela got a bad penalty against Atlanta United to give him one.
That's what drives me nuts.
They've been getting cheap PKs all
the,
year.
The thing about that one, to me, if he hadn't fallen down, because he fell down, there was contact. There was contact, but he fell down.
Vela.
Yes.
Yes, he did fall down outside the area.
No, the one inside the area with the hand on the shoulder.
Which one are we talking about?
The penalty in RSL.
Oh. No, I'm talking about the one in Atlanta.
Okay.
Or the one against Atlanta.
Let's talk the RSL one real quick, because he gets a penalty there. Yeah. It's light contact. Guy puts his arm on the shoulder. I don't think he pulled him. I think he was hand-checking him. Hey, felt the contact, fall down.
That's what you're supposed to do.
I think he was about to get tripped anyway.
Yes.
But that happens right before, the day before, Pitti gets tripped again in the 18, mm-hmm. and he doesn't get a call. Pitti Martinez and Carlos Vela are both superstars. Why is one getting light calls and the other one not getting calls to where, for the first time, and I believe this is the case, first time in Major League Soccer history that you have referees rebuked in back-to-back league matches for missing calls on the same player?
Yeah, it's interesting. There might have been another penalty, too, and we only got one replay up in our booth, or actually in the Fox booth. I was peeking. But very early in the match, there appeared to be a handball earned by Pitti.
Yep.
I forget who the Portland player was, but a handball earned by Pitti. And I don't even believe they checked that.
No, they didn't check it.
And there again is where I get very frustrated about the mechanics of everything, where, you know, a couple weeks ago here in Atlanta, we had play stopped in the middle of an attack because VAR had buzzed down for a check, checking the monitor. And now we have other instances where checks are either not happening or happening too quickly because they don't want to stop play.
It's too much inconsistency. And that's why, for me, I believe in VAR. I think VAR is a good thing for the game. I think it fixes more than it messes up. I think it fixes more problems than it creates. It doesn't fix every problem. And I don't think it can, because it's still human beings running it. You're still down to Alex Chilowitz's judgment, Villarreal's judgment, because they're going to make the call ultimately. But there are things that Major League Soccer can do to make it better. Mm-hmm. And what I don't understand, and I'd love to hear the reasoning, I don't think there's another league in the world that uses video assistant referees, or another competition for that matter, that has them on site.
Yep.
The Premier League didn't do it. Bundesliga doesn't do it. Serie A doesn't do it. Centralized location. I think if you do that, you have a smaller core of video assistant referees. You're not pulling guys off the road instead of working a USL championship game or working as a fourth official. You're pulling guys in who are dedicated video assistant referees. It's going to be better if you do that.
Yeah.
When you're pulling guys who are doing three different jobs and you're bringing them in to be a video assistant referee, and you're doing something like what you did with Alex Chilowitz, where he refs a game as a video assistant referee the night before, then travels from Vancouver to Portland, then does this game, do a centralized location.
The NFL does it.
Everybody
does. The NBA
does
it. The National Hockey League does it. I like the NBA system where, for boundary calls, Secaucus, New Jersey, where the replay room is, they will buzz the official, or they'll make a telephone call. They go right to the monitor. They put the headset on. They're told right away, out of bounds, their ball.
Yeah.
If it's something involving a judgment call, like a flagrant foul, clear path foul, something like that, they let the referee on site make the decision after looking at the monitor. The replay room can only recommend.
That's what it should be.
Absolutely.
Offside.
And you have the infrastructure for that right now.
Yep.
Right now you have the infrastructure for that. The only major sport that I can think of that continues to do on-site replay other than MLS would be many conferences in college football.
Okay.
But again, even the SEC now is kind of moving towards a centralized system now in Birmingham. I don't know if the VARs are trained to be watching the pitch from their vantage point or watching the monitor at all times. And that would be a mechanical thing that would probably have to be changed if you go to Central. I don't know what they're trained. But if it's good enough for FIFA at the World Cup, and it's good enough for all the major leagues in Europe, surely it has to be good enough for MLS, right?
I would think so. I don't know if it's a cost situation. I don't know if it's an infrastructure situation. It feels more complicated to have every venue with a VAR booth. Feels like it would be easier to have that in a centralized location beam the feeds in and do it.
It'd open up one more booth for the radio broadcast, which when we're in Columbus and LA, that would be very nice.
Yes, we've done a few, see? Problem
we're
solved.
We're in D.C., you know? We've done more than a few games from the stands, so everyone would be happy if you... But whatever. All right, we're going to get to your questions in just a moment. It's a shame that we have to start with that because it kind of overshadows what a great win that was for Atlanta United on Sunday. I think outside of the playoff win at New York City, the best road win this club has ever had.
Yeah, I mean, 2017 in Orlando for feeling maybe, but for a performance, this was it. This was really strong all the way across the board. Was it perfect? No, because you're on the road and one of the toughest places to play in the league. You gave up some chances, but you handled it. Yeah. You handled the intensity of the match, and that's what stood out to me. You go from Campione's Cup on Wednesday, where you lift a trophy, very emotional night, lots of celebration. You get back down to earth really quickly. You then fly across the country, and you play in one of the most difficult atmospheres in the league, and you handle it with flying colors. Mm-hmm. Not many teams in this league can do that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's get to your questions now, and keep typing them in on the bottom of your screen. Questions are brought to you by Country Financial. Don't get overwhelmed. Get started at TakeSimpleSteps.com.
Let's see on Twitter, Unite Chop Rise says, can Julian keep going at this rate without rest? I'm worried about the minutes he is getting with almost zero time off.
It's going to be tough. We talked about it on the midday show with Chuckery and Randy. I think this is where that possession work all season long comes into play because we've seen it pop up a few times here. This team's getting better at resting in play where you just take your foot off a little bit, slow it down, knock the ball around. Luis Fernando, I think, might help with this as well. How quickly do you mix him in? We'll have to see. But I think in Orlando, let's assume Julian Gressel starts. Let's assume he's going to start in the Open Cup final as well. And you don't feel like you can play anybody else in either one of those games and get the same performance. Orlando, I think your instruction is pick your spots. Don't bomb up and down the wing. Pick your spots. Keep it simple. Conserve your energy to a degree. And if you have to expend it, it needs to be defensive first.
Great points. But you know what's interesting? You have three matches left before the international break. Which of those three matches is least important?
Orlando.
Yes. It's weird to think about it that way, isn't it?
Well, but, it's the weakest opponent of the three, too.
But not only that, in terms of implications, you've got a cup final and then Philadelphia, who you're tied for first with right now.
Sure.
There hasn't really been this dramatic rotation. I know we got a question on Twitter about, I think from Stockton Jukes, about, you know, how are they going to change the squad from Friday to Tuesday from last Sunday? There hasn't really been a dramatic rotation at any point this season. It's a player here, a player there, maybe in an extreme case, a third player or something like that.
Easily.
And I think you can still do that and have a really strong team in Orlando.
For sure.
But if you are worried about Julian and the work rate that he's put in, and if you've listened to SDH, I've brought this up a number of times, I'm worried about it. He looked like he was gassed at the end of the Portland match, which is totally understandable, not an indictment of him at all. You know, maybe Orlando is the one where you think about giving him a night off, especially considering there will be conditions in play with the heat and humidity.
The other thing about Orlando, too, is their outside backs are weaker right now. They're missing Juan, which would be on the other side anyway, but they're missing Joao Mochinho, who can get forward and is dangerous. So they're going to have second string outside backs. They're not going to be bombing forward in the same way. This might be a game where you could give Luis Fernando a game. I mean, he's playing. Like, it's not like he needs to get fit. It's not like he needs to train. He's trained. He's played.
I think he'll be in the 18. I think
that's why you make the announcement today.
Yeah. The other complication is with Escobar hurt. It sounds like he did not train today.
Right.
You're down a right wing back / right back right now, which makes Julian a little more important.
That's because Luis.
Yeah, it would have to be, really.
Absolutely.
Because it's not going to be Pitti.
No.
So it would that now that would be really interesting. If you get Luis Fernando in there in Orlando in his MLS debut, oh boy. That is an enormous opportunity for him. That's an enormous chance. And if he handles it well, he becomes an instant club legend. I'll just say that is a very hard spot to put a young man of that age and that level of experience into his first MLS action.
Is there a chance for Mo Adams? on the right
side? Yeah, it could be. I mean, we haven't seen him play wing back since the LAFC game, so that's why I'm not really thinking that as much. But yeah, it's definitely possible.
I would like to have Mo Adams involved in the Orlando game just because it could get rather chippy. Yep. And he's a guy that could stand up to that.
Yeah, I'm not as worried about Luis Fernando in terms of the experience level.
You've seen him more than just about anyone, I'll take your word for it.
Not worried about it because, I mean, Deion Pereira, he had two games with Watford way back, and that was it.
Yeah.
You know, that's a very small experience, and he's been thrown into some big situations.
And he's done great.
Absolutely. So if you're going to sign these guys, you've got to trust them, and if they're showing enough in training to earn the spot, that would be the spot where you could afford to rest Gressel, I think.
Would Mikey Ambrose, I'm just, again, you in could. The theory that Gressel would not play, is Mikey Ambrose maybe an option?
You could. Right, I mean, we've seen him on the right side. He doesn't go forward as much there because he's left-footed. But, yeah, he can.
Yeah.
You could see
Miram,
it.
Maybe?
Possible.
I'd love to have Miram in Orlando, though. We talked about that today.
No, swap Miram sides. Over.
Oh.
You could.
You could, yeah. You could, yeah, because Miram's not left-footed, right?
No, I mean he does not. He's not predominantly left-footed. He can play on either side. He's always played on the left.
Yeah.
Okay.
But he's not left-footed. Like it's not like he's handcuffed to.
No. He's not Miguel Almiron left-footed. No.
Yeah. Okay. Good questions. Thank you.
See, Brett Cash on Facebook says, Mike, do you believe that the Portland win was bigger than Minnesota last year with being down 10 men? In the freezing
is that
ring.
Kevin Egan that typed that
See,
in?
See, I'm the one who's usually arguing that.
Well, that was, look, they had big wins on the road last year. And that Minnesota win is absolutely one of them because Atlanta United had never had to play a match like that before. Conditions aside, just, you know, playing down a man for an hour on the road and bunkering and winning, they had never done that before. They played great at LA Galaxy. 2-0 should have been 3-0. They missed the penalty. They played great in Columbus, I thought, last year. 2-0 win. And remember that stat that I had for you a couple weeks ago where Atlanta United, the only time prior to, I guess now, where they had beaten a team that finished in the top 10 of the Shield table on the road was last year in Columbus, and Columbus finished 10th.
Yeah.
So that 2-0 win was really good. Obviously, we talked about the one at Yankee Stadium. But to me, this one feels bigger because of where you were playing, how much Portland really, really wanted that, not only to avenge what happened in MLS Cup, but Portland's also really scratching and clawing for a playoff berth right now, whereas Minnesota, that was 3 weeks into the season. Yeah. So I put it ahead of Minnesota, but I definitely understand where Brett's coming from because that was a good win too, no doubt.
Yeah, no, it's bigger. It's a better performance. It's just a better overall performance. Minnesota is a unique one. I think the Orlando game in 17 is a unique one because of the goal that won it from Villalba.
Yes.
This was the best win on the road in regular season
the
play.
The pass of the season from Gressel and a goal, an epic goal.
And Brad's best save
and
of the year,
Brad's
too,
best
quite
save
frankly.
I mean, that's a massive performance.
Mm. Yeah.
Against a team that's going to be, top three in the West.
Yeah.
They could be, yeah.
They will be.
Yeah. I'm a little less sure now having seen them in person, and the only reason why I say that is and they're old, and that's the thing. Like, they have a ton of matches coming up down the stretch, and Gio's going to have to rotate a little bit more. It's just something to keep an eye on. I mean, if they can get to the playoffs in good shape where maybe they're hosting a first-round game.
No, they'll get that. That's what I'm with Jimmy. I think they'll be top three in the regular season.
Okay,
so
if they get to that point, then they get the international break off. That will probably help them recharge a little bit.
The other thing is they can go into Bank of California and beat LAFC. They have no fear of that situation.
I think they're not the only team in the West that could do that, too. I think if LAFC
runs
into
trying to do it this weekend.
Yeah, and honestly, we said this when we were at LAFC. If LA Galaxy knocks on their door in LAFC's first game, Galaxy's second, with LAFC having rested, really have been off for more than 2 weeks because of the international break, and Galaxy in a little bit of rhythm shows up, and that is a second-round game. LAFC, I think, would be very, very concerned about that situation, which is why, again, for Atlanta United, their standpoint, every match is very important from here on out because there is still a chance you could host the MLS Cup final.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I did check the schedule. The Falcons are not playing at home on November 11th, so that is the date will not have to be moved. It is a possibility. Let's hope that will come up and be a concern.
Let's see quickly. Charlie on Twitter says, since you guys are not calling the Open Cup final, do you want to grab a beer with them?
No, we're going to try to find a way to do something for the Open Cup final. Stay tuned. I don't think we're going to be able to call the match. ESPN's just not going to relinquish the radio rights. We're very frustrated about that. The club has been working on it at the very highest levels. It makes no sense to us, but that's what they're going to decide. We're going to try to provide some kind of content from the match on Tuesday. It's obviously very important. It's a trophy game. As much as I'd love to have the beer with you, we'll probably
be working
in
some.
I think we're going to be working, so we'll take a rain check.
Let's see. Jay Rillis asks, how does a healthy Tito fit into the picture going forward? Will he stay at the club if he's locked into the power sub role?
See, that the long term, there's so many unknowns that are going to affect that. You have a lot of guys who are, you know, 3 years of the contract. You're going to have a lot of decisions to make. You're going to have guys who are going to be looking for raises. You're not going to be able to keep everybody. So that part, no clue. How does he fit right now? I think he's a super sub. I really do. In the 3-5-2, he has to be. If they go to a 4-3-3, that creates opportunities, but I don't think they need to do that right now. Maybe there's an opponent. Maybe there's a second half where you want to do it. I don't think you're going to do that right now. And, you know, I mean, we've seen a little bit of him here lately, but he hasn't really shown a ton, not over any extended period of time, to change the lineup right now.
If it's not broke, don't fix it.
And, I mean, the long term is so tough because beginning of the year, the conversation about Gressel talking about a new contract, because his is, I believe, up at the end of the year.
We've heard. Yeah.
LGP, same.
Nagby.
Nagby's a conversation as well. There's going to be others. You do have an expansion draft that's going to affect some guys on the roster. It wouldn't affect Tito. But you're going to have some shuffling. So that role might not be the same next year, mm-hmm. because you might have a different cast of characters, and you might go to a 4-3-3 because it suits the group you have. You never know.
If, and I don't know contractual situations.
Yeah, that's the hard thing about it.
But let's say it's a decision between Tito Villalba and Justin Merrim for next year. Who are you sticking with?
Well, I mean, you have to look at Merrim because he's more versatile.
That's kind of what I'm thinking.
And
it's no disrespect to Tito whatsoever. I mean, it's a fantastic luxury to have him right now, and he will be heard from.
I think so.
Tito's going to be heard from. I mean, let's not get totally locked down on Tito being a super sub forever. He's going to get his spots. It's a tremendous luxury to have. You hope he doesn't get his spots because there's an injury to someone else, but that's a possibility.
You have to plan for that.
And quite frankly, Brandon Vasquez, although it sounds like he trained today, we don't know
where he played with the twos on Friday.
So, but he's kind of working his way back in. You don't have Romario Williams anymore. So Tito is going to be very, very important for Atlanta United. He'll continue to be in the 18. And if there's another trophy to be lifted, or two, this year in Atlanta, Tito's going to be a big part of that. I really believe that.
I agree.
Shiva and Chris are kind of asking the same question. Do you see Parkey playing any more this season?
Yeah. I mean, it's, again, is he going to be playing in the same role he did the previous 2 years? No, I don't see that anymore.
Frank was asked about that today. I want to pull up the quote. I thought he had a really, really good answer. And this is going to be via Doug Roberson of the AJC. Forgive me. Let me see if I can find it here. We're in the bunker. Our studio doesn't have windows, so cell service is a little bit slow here. Okay. Frank, this is from Doug Roberson. It says, Frank said, Parkhurst hasn't been playing because of the need for speed in the back because of formation. Mm-hmm. Said he's had a great attitude, which obviously doesn't surprise any of us, and is really pushing the others in training. Not a surprise to us either.
Yeah.
And look, this is going to sound like a really little thing, but dating back to last Wednesday, you know, Doc Garber's trying to hand the trophy to Jeff Lorenowitz. Jeff isn't even looking at him because he wants Michael Parkhurst to accept the trophy. He's still the captain of this team, mm-hmm. even if he's not out there on the pitch. His leadership is really, really important.
Yeah. Who was it who was up there with him? They were, like, calling Jeff back over.
Yeah.
Like, come on,
yeah,
Jeff.
Yeah, I think it was the Liga MX commissioner or president.
Yeah, it was.
Whatever.
Enrique Bonilla.
Yeah. It was a neat scene, but I think that tells you a lot about how Parkey's teammates feel about
him.
And trust me, I mean, there is no better guy on this team. When we're on the road, he's always... Parkey and Mikey Ambrose, I love those two. They always come up to us. They always say hi, ask how we're doing, shake our hands. They're really good people. Parkey is also one who will tell you when he feels tired. And Father Time is undefeated. But
you'll see him. You're going to need to at some point. It's how the game plays out.
Honestly, I'd love to see him in there on Tuesday. I really, really would.
That might be a tough one if you're in the same shape, because Minnesota does have speed.
Yeah, or even coming on late to help you see it out.
That would be a cool spot.
I would really like to see him have that opportunity to be rewarded. And if it's one of those things where maybe Jeff has the armband and he's playing in the midfield and you want Parker to come and see it out, you give him the armband or something like that. That's obviously very wishful thinking.
Yeah, that's true. If you're in the position to do it, that would be great.
And Minnesota, I saw the thing you retweeted today. I mean, they're basically saying, we don't even care about our next league match. We're going all in on Tuesday. Sounds like they're going to have 500-plus supporters.
Yep. It's awesome.
They're chartering aircraft to come down here. This will absolutely be the biggest match in Loon's history. It'll probably be, I really think, the second biggest match in Atlanta United history. Atlanta United's played in some really big ones, CONCACAF Champions League, Eastern Conference Finals. But this is big, a chance to win the U.S. Open Cup. It is a major trophy.
So let's use the second part of what Frank said, or maybe the first part. The second part of the answer about the speed in the back.
First part.
Okay, let's use that to transition to the whiteboard.
Let's do it.
Because that's a critical piece here.
As Jason's getting up, I'll remind you that Stoppage Time is brought to you by... Yes? No? This one? That one. Stoppage Time is brought to you by Aaron's Easy, Beautiful, Affordable, Top Brands in Furniture, Electronics, and Appliances. Your credit isn't the best. That's fine. Get started at Aaron's.com or one of 47 Atlanta stores.
All right. So, speed in the back.
The production values are really increasing on Stoppage Time, aren't they?
That's good. So speed in the back is critical if you're going to play a 3-5-2, because look, you've got these guys here, you've got these guys here, you're playing two here, you got three guys back here by themselves. In the past, when we saw Leandro Gonzalez Pires and Michael Parker as your two center backs, and you saw breakdowns and breakaways, those two are not as fast as Miles Robinson, Franco Escobar. Escobar in that role doubles down on having two guys who can cover ground, because when it breaks down, you've got these two who, when you're in possession, they can step really high but still recover. That's a critical piece. It's one of those little underrated things that Frank drops out sometimes in quotes that gets lost in the shuffle. It's allowed Atlanta to attack in this way with this many bodies, and sometimes two of these guys too. It allows them to do that because you have the protection of Miles and Escobar. So Orlando has been pretty consistent as of late in a 4-2-3-1. And like we've talked about with Atlanta, it's a 3-5-2 that's kind of masquerading as a 3-4-3 with Pitti and Barco tucking in behind Joseph. So how's it going to look if Orlando's attacking in their 4-2-3-1. Let's put it static and just look at the matchups for a little bit here, and then we'll get into some of the things to watch for. So if Orlando's attacking, Atlanta's defending in their own half, this is their 4-2-3-1. Who's going to start up top? It's been Dom Dwyer, and he has not produced much of anything in a while.
He's produced a lot of souvenirs.
Yeah, that's true. I think everybody in the wall already has one, though, so they might want to see something different. Tesho Akindele, the one who would concern me a little bit is Benji Michel, because he's an unknown. And we talk about Minnesota next week. Mason Toy has been that for them. Not a traditional number nine, but he's got speed, unpredictable, young, fearless. I'm wondering if Orlando goes in that road. All right, if Mauricio Pereira starts, he's here. You have to account for him.
Do you think he will, though? He's only played 45 minutes for them.
I would. If I was Orlando, I would. If he can get you past halftime, absolutely he should start. And then you make the sub. If he gives you 60 and Kleshin gives you 30, that's a good deal. Mm-hmm. Nani out here, but he's going to come inside. Chris Mueller would be the other option over here. Could be Akindele. Could be Benji Michel if you want to get two forwards kind of on the field.
And Mueller... maybe a little banged up too.
Yeah, he's a question.
So, just for the record,
I think you'd like to see him. If he's if not, then it could look a little more like a lopsided 4-4-2. And they've done this at times where you've got Tesho Akindele or Benji Michel out here, but they're going to play like a forward because they're a forward.
you're going to have a number 10, and you're going to have Nani coming inside. So it's slanted. That can be difficult when you haven't seen that type of setup. So what that would mean, let's say they go with that. That means Miles on whoever the forward is what you're going to see a lot of times. You're likely going to see Leandro Gonzalez-Pires in space a lot with whoever that is. If it's Benji Michel, that's a matchup that you don't really like. Tesho Akindele, all right, he's got speed, but that's a little more of a physical matchup. Leandro in there is good. That means Escobar is going to be free more. Unless you plan for it and you slide. And that means Escobar's taking this. Miles is free. LGP's taking here. That means you've got to account for Nani cutting inside.
Now, it's looking like Escobar is right. Not going to play, though.
So, that gets it even more interesting. Because then it takes away, you know, some of your speed options. Mm-hmm. Now, you could go Parkhurst, which can work.
What about...
which Pogba. Could go Pogba, well, which but, means you're flipping it.
Right.
That would be Pogba over here and LGP over here. That can work, too.
Could you, and hear me out, Pogba as the most central of your three center backs, Miles on the right and LGP on the left?
You could. It really depends on your matchups. And that's why the three is not as important as to who is where. I know that was an early thing everybody got hung up on in the 3-4-3. It doesn't really matter which side is which. Pogba's a little more left-sided. You probably want him either central or left.
Well, and I like the Pogba-Miram link-up, too. And I know there have been some shaky moments, but I think it's generally been pretty good.
Yeah, it's generally been pretty good. And that's the other thing here, is if your right winger's coming in, you're going to have him free to do one of two things. Double down and help, or then really play up high and put pressure on to keep their right back. And without Juan being that guy, that actually works out really good for Justin Merriman in that kind of game. He can pick his spots on when to go and when to sit. All right, so if they go in this direction, Miles is going to be the biggest question because he's your safety valve. You also want him marking their top forward. Mm-hmm. So what's your balance going to be? And that probably depends on who you pair him up with. If it's Pogba and LGP, which is what it's been, and that's probably your safest bet, unless Escobar gets magically healthy, then you're looking at Pogba with one, I think. I don't think you want Pogba free organizing as much. So if he's here, if he's central, then he's going to be taking this guy. You don't want your free guy here as much, so if it slides, it slides, and you want somebody free. I would want it to look a lot like this. Mark, free. You just want somebody free between the two, because then if your free guy's over here and he gets loose, your free guy's useless. So you've got to slide a little bit. That's if Orlando does what we're talking about. If they go with two forwards, but it's slanted. If they don't, then it's a little easier to deal with. But you got to worry about Pereira. You got to worry about Nani coming inside. Who's going to account for them? Jeff Lorenowitz would make a lot of sense, again, because he is the most defensive of your central midfielders. We've seen Rometty do that. We've seen Nagby do that. Jeff's the guy you probably trust the most in the situation. Jeff's in a really good run of form as well. Mm-hmm. So if you put Jeff here, that frees up Nagby a little bit. The other thing, too, about Orlando, and something that has concerned me with them, if you play this setup and you play Sebastian Mendez, Will Johnson as your two here, Johnson doesn't have the legs he used to. He's going to sit a little bit more, but he can push as needed. Mendez just called into the Ecuadorian national team. He can bomb up and down. He can be the one that surprises you popping up into spots. Now, they haven't done a lot of that, and it's kind of surprised me a little bit. He feels like a weapon that's just not really being used correctly for Orlando. But he would be the one that could scare you if you worry about Pereira or Kleshin, if you worry about Nani coming inside. Mendez could be the one who is free and can hurt you, and he can shoot from distance as well. I don't see them bombing forward from the flanks very much. Juan Wood, not going to be available. Joao Moutinho can, but he's not going to be available, it looks like. So you're dealing with reserves who are going to be a little more tentative. Mm-hmm. That means when you turn it over, like we talked about with Merrim, if he's on this side, he's going to be able to go 1v1. Gressel's going to be able to pick his spots to go. You're going to have opportunities. If Mendez goes, Pitti and Barco are now coming here, and you've got some great opportunities in transition. Orlando is going to have to consider that when they look at their lineup and they look at their choices. That's going to be a big, scary thing for James O'Connor is, all right, I got two outside backs who can't really press much. If I want Mendez to get forward because I'm going to have to help my front four, he's going to have to go sometimes. If he picks the wrong times, 5-on-4 at best is what it can turn into.
And that would not be good for Orlando at all.
If you've got Pitti, Barco, Joseph against two center backs.
Yeah, I'll take that.
I like that.
I'll take that against pretty much anyone.
I like that.
I got some MLS breaking news, uh-oh, and I'll let Conti do the honors.
Okay, dun, it's dun, in dun, French. What Impact announced K. Remy Gard. They fired Remy Gard.
Wow.
And they named Wilmer Cabrera his replacement.
Wow.
Hunter.
Whoa. That's a bold move, Joey Saputo.
Thanks to Thad on Twitter for
wow, thank you, Thad.
Hey, you said somebody was going to go hire Wilmer Cabrera quickly.
Well, I didn't think it'd be this fast. I mean, Montreal is still above the playoff line, barely, but yeah, above the playoff line right now. You know, Remy Gard last year, early in the season, said some things publicly that maybe he should not have said that might have lost him his dressing room. Or his dressing room may have been lost to begin with. Basically, it felt like there was a real divide between the technical staff. I wonder what that means for Joel Batts and the rest of the technical staff, yeah, there, by the way. You know, you're going from an all-French language staff to Wilmer Cabrera now. But anyhow, there was a real chasm, a divide between the players and the technical staff. They got through the rest of the year. They actually, wow, played really well the rest they of did last year. They have been fading lately. They've been a mess. I mean, they had a 3-0 lead on Dallas at home in their last match, and ended up with a draw, and I think Dallas scored twice in stoppage. I think Wilmer Cabrera is an outstanding hire by them. Great hire.
Yeah.
Great hire. But I am shocked.
A little bit more coming out from Charles Dubé, who covers the Impact in Montreal. Translated, funny timing in the middle of a week before a very important game, but not so surprising as a decision, especially due to the negotiations for a renewal of Remy Gard's contract stumbling.
Yeah.
Why rather than Monday? Due to the negotiations with Wilmer Cabrera. So it sounds like Cabrera was like, if you want me,
yeah,
now.
Do it now.
Or I'm not, yeah, coming.
Are they still in the Voyagers Cup or are they out?
They still are, I believe.
Okay. So they would be in the final then?
Yes.
For Voyager, which, yes, is CONCACAF Champions League qualification.
Mm-hmm.
And
that might,
hey,
be the big,
listen,
focal point.
No one's a bigger expert at navigating a team for a domestic cup final than Wilmer Cabrera. They won the U.S. Open Cup with him last year in Houston and got him in the CONCACAF Champions League. Thank you for that tag. Yeah. That's awesome.
Wow.
So we've had a lot of breaking news on the show today.
What else is going to happen in the last 16 minutes?
In the last 16 minutes of the show, we're going to have an in-depth discussion on who the second best team in MLS is.
Ooh. I'm leaving.
That's an inside joke. No, it's actually not an inside joke. Let's take your questions instead. Brought to you by Country Financial. Don't get overwhelmed. Get started at TakeSimpleSteps.com.
Let's see. Brett Cash, he's asking a question. It's going to be his first match attending live for the U.S. Open Cup Finals.
Oh, all right.
What is a good time to show up Tuesday for tailgating?
3 a.m.
Yes. Midweeks are weird. It is a little bit later than usual, although this is a final, so I don't really know yet.
It's hard to kind of get a vibe on this one. It sounds like the ticket sales have been really, really, yeah, robust. I don't think they're going to open up the top level.
What time is kickoff?
7:30?
7:30? I think it's a 7:30. I don't think it's an 8.
I would get there by 4. If it's 7:30,
exactly,
I'd get there by
thinking.
4.
You'll get there early, get a spot, go to the Gulch, get in early. The supporters groups will be rolling in. Usually the midweeks are more of a bring-your-own type of tailgate, but come down, hang out, join into the march. It's definitely worth it.
I strongly recommend MARTA, too. I think that would be a, yes, really good play by you for multiple reasons, but yeah, you don't have to deal with the parking hassle. It drops you off right there, across the street, go down the steps, and you're in the tailgate. Have fun, really. And hopefully we'll see you there.
Let's see. Twittered from Jason. He said, why did MLS help start the League's Cup without assurances from teams involved that they would field first-choice lineups?
Thank you for the question. I'm glad we're getting to this. We talked about it on SDH a little bit. And if you don't know what he's talking about, last night we
That's
had...
That's part of the problem.
Yeah, maybe. Club America played Tigres, and Tigres won. They went through. And then you had LA Galaxy at home to Cruz Azul. And I guess there was a little bit of a head fake where Scalotto or someone suggested that Zlatan and Polenta would play.
No, they announced they were being added to the roster.
Oh, okay.
Because they were not initially part of the 23. Right. Remember these? You submit a 23 the day before. It was announced, hey, we've added them to the roster.
So it leads you to believe that they're going to play, and then they don't play. And they end up losing 2-1. It was a good match.
They played well.
It was a good match, but it has brought up a talking point today. How is this going to be taken seriously if MLS clubs are not fielding first-choice lineups? I'm going to defend Scalotto just a teensy bit here. LA Galaxy is in a playoff race right now. Mm-hmm. There are 7 or 8 weeks left in the MLS season. Who do they play next on this weekend?
I think it's a team that wears black and gold.
Pretty significant Trafico match on the road, but very significant.
But is it a rivalry? LAFC's never beaten the Galaxy before.
Yeah. Yes, I've been waiting on that one all day.
I'm not excusing it. It's not going to become a big thing if teams don't take it seriously. I hope, though, this is another nudge in the direction of rescheduling League's Cup to a better point in the schedule for everyone where it can be mutually agreeable to Liga MX and MLS, and you aren't doing this in the thick of a playoff chase.
You got to bump it up a little bit. I don't know how much further you can bump it up. That's the challenge.
I think what you do, we talked about this on SDH, remember...
If you do that.
MLS, the teams, that the 2 through 6 teams in each conference are going to League's Cup if they are not otherwise in CONCACAF Champions League. So if you're in CONCACAF Champions League, you do not play in League's Cup if you're in MLS. Liga MX is different. You can go to both CONCACAF Champions League and League's Cup. I think you could fix that pretty easily on the Liga MX side and play your League's Cup matches in the CONCACAF Champions League windows. And then that way, you're in alignment with that. It's very early in the MLS season. It's early enough in the Clausura and League MX where you aren't going to screw with anyone's playoff chances or anything. That's what I would do. I would align it with the CONCACAF Champions
League. If you do that, you need to do one more thing, and you're going to have to work with CONCACAF on it. You're going to want to do what Europe does, essentially, where the Champions League games are on Tuesday and Wednesday. League's Cup games would be on Thursday. Mm-hmm. Now, they're going to get bent out of shape because they're not going to be able to schedule one game at a time in League's Cup. I'm sorry. One game at a time needs to be the case in Champions League. If you're going to throw all these on ESPN Plus anyway, I don't care about exclusivity.
Yeah.
It needs to be Thursday games. If half of them kick off at 8 o'clock, the other half kick off at 10:30, then so be it. If you do that.
Right.
Because you're not going to, you better not schedule League's Cup games at the same time as Champions League games. That would be a bad look.
No, you can't do that. You can't.
They could, because it's two separate competitions.
You shouldn't, though. They shouldn't. Because you're cannibalizing your premier tournament.
The important part should be to do this as a complement to your teams that are playing in Champions League, not to be a detriment. And also, you started it this year. If you weren't going to be able to go into it this year with guarantees of first-choice lineups and doing it the right way, you shouldn't have started it this year. Because now it's already got a bad taste in people's mouths.
That's a good point. Now, then again, the Campione's Cup kind of left a bad taste after what happened last year in Toronto, and it became a lot bigger this year.
Yeah, having Atlanta host was big. That one's different. Yeah. It's one game, and you can't guarantee that at that part in the schedule the team is in the same spot as they were when they won the trophy. It's tougher. Now, I think that needs to be at the beginning of the season, too, like I've said. That should be the curtain raiser.
But right now, so late in the schedule, like playoffs are positioning is on the, especially this year with seeding and home matches. LA Galaxy's there in third place at 41 points. Eighth place out of the playoffs is 37 points.
Yeah, no,
that's why I
don't completely fault Scalotto for what he did.
The flip side to me, though, is they play Tuesday and then they play Sunday night.
Yeah,
you could have done that. You could have done it.
And you're at home. Yeah.
And this is where MLS gets stuck, because the argument for not wanting group stage in CONCACAF Champions League was because it was in this spot in the calendar, and they didn't want it to detract from the playoff race. So then what do? You go and create a competition and put it in this spot in the calendar. You can't do that.
Right.
You just can't do that.
Let's see, Andrew asked, what are the chances that MLS makes changes in advance of the CONCACAF Champions League 2020 that enables MLS teams to be more competitive?
They got to get the CBA done first. That's the thing, they got to get the CBA done. That's my concern, is that the CBA drags on and you get to January 1, you don't have a CBA, you have the window open in Europe, your teams don't know what to do in terms of selling players because they don't know what mechanisms they're going to have to bring players in, and then your teams that are preparing for CONCACAF Champions League are stuck in upgrading their rosters for CONCACAF Champions League. So that needs to be part of the conversation with the CBA is, look, MLS Cup, November 11, correct? You need to have a CBA done by December 31. You have to. And I don't know if you're going to be able to pull that off.
I would even argue, and you're right, I even feel like it needs to be done November 12th.
Oh, for sure, because for sure.
When's your expansion draft? When's your free agency going to open? Like and that's what makes me feel a little bit uneasy. And I know negotiations are tough, and there's a lot of posturing on both sides. But
for sure.
Clock is ticking. It really, really is ticking. And if this goes all the way into February, it's not going to be good for the league. It's going to put a lot of teams behind the eight ball. And the prospect of a work stoppage is not going to be good in a lot of different markets. And think about how they would feel in Nashville, Miami, you know, potentially delaying the starts of those franchises. Think of how you would feel if you're in St. Louis and you're putting all that money into their franchise right now. It's tough. It's a scary proposition.
I get that the players have to keep that as an option. I understand that's the biggest card that they have. I don't think they necessarily want to. I don't think it helps them. I do think if it gets to that point that it's not done, they will operate under the existing CBA going forward.
Yeah, I think both sides understand how destructive a work stoppage would be.
Yeah.
The players don't want that. They really don't. You know, there have been instances where, in the National Football League, the last time they had a work stoppage, which was over the summer of 2011 or 12, can't remember. The players, they were pretty dug in.
Yeah.
This is different. The league's growing. The league is in a great spot right now. I genuinely feel they don't want the work stoppage.
No, I don't think so.
I also feel like you have some owners like Arthur Blank, Jimmy Haslam now in Columbus, Bob Kraft in New England, Stan Kroenke, for what it's worth, in Colorado, even though he might not even know he has an MLS team. But you have NFL owners that have been down this road before who can probably help shepherd this through.
Yeah, absolutely. You need to get it done quickly, and you need to get the plan for 2020 underway because of that. Yeah. Because you need to better compete in the CONCACAF Champions
League.
Some
more charter flights, too. Like Wayne Rooney.
It'll happen.
Wayne Rooney is a...
That'll happen. I don't know why DC didn't charter back from Vancouver. That doesn't make any sense to me.
Like, unless they're out of legs.
They should have planned better.
Yeah.
Because that's an obvious one that you should be taking.
Mm-hmm. See, Jack on Twitter and Brett on Facebook were asking, what's the status on Bello getting back into like the 18 and stuff?
Well, he's played three games. I mean, he's played three games with the USL Championship. He upped his minutes every time from 45 to 70 to 90. Looked good in the last one. He's ready. I mean, if he plays more in USL, it's to keep him sharp. Like, he's ready for the 18. Doesn't mean he goes straight in. Doesn't mean he's straight into it because there's competition like we've talked about. Right. But I think he's ready for the 18 at this point.
Ambrose was in the 18 on Sunday. I think on Friday it might be Ambrose going out, Bello going in. I think that would be the trade. I don't think Bello starts.
Neil on Facebook's asking, do you see them adding a fourth DP in the new CBA?
I think they do something along those lines. I don't know what it looks like. If it's a dedicated spot for a young designated player.
Maybe a level between TAM and designated player.
Yeah, if there's something, or if it's something else, another one of these that you can buy or trade or sell or what. I don't know. I don't know what they'll do, but I think there will be an availability for teams to have a fourth designated player. I think they need to.
Let's see. Yasin asks, I'll phrase this, getting ahead of ourselves, but if Atlanta United won the U.S. Open Cup and won the MLS Cup, would you consider that a trouble?
Yeah, 100% it's a trouble.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a trouble.
Just making sure.
Yeah.
Not the ultimate treble, but
no, there's different levels of trebles. Yeah, obviously. I mean, Manchester City last year did the treble.
Right.
And they argued that they did the quadruple because they won the Community Shield.
Right.
And that would be this argument. So I think the team would call it a treble, and they should.
Yeah. The team will
definitely
call it
for it. Yeah, marketing.
They should. The ultimate would be Sports with Shield. Champions League.
Oh yeah,
that would be the ultimate.
And that's actually a really good point because a lot of people were saying last year, "Oh, Atlanta United can win a treble. They can win U.S. Open Cup, Supporter Shield, and MLS Cup."
That would be a treble as well.
That'd be a good one. I mean, so trebles have many different definition. Yeah,
there's different flavors. I mean, it's three trophies. Yeah. And if you look at like Manchester City, they're competing for this year. They did the Community Shield, the League Cup, because they have two cups, the FA Cup, the League, and the Champions League. Mm-hmm. They could win five. Last year, they could have won six because you had the Super Cup. Or no, they didn't. We weren't in the Super Cup. If you're in a Super Cup, you could win that.
Right.
For me, I would love the FIFA Club World Cup, CONCACAF Champions League, and MLS Cup. That would be the ultimate treble.
The only team that has won, I think, every trophy in a calendar year that they could win was Barcelona in 2009. Because they won the Copa del Rey, they won the league, so that was at the end of the 08-09 season. They won Champions League in the 08-09 final in 2009. They won the Super Cup between the Champions League winner and the UEFA Cup winner at that time. They won a Spanish, because Spain would have their league champion and the cup champion play in like a Spanish Super Cup. They did that because they played the second place team from the league. And then they won the Club World Cup at the end of the year. They won six trophies, every trophy they could, in one calendar year. I think that's it.
Time for one more. Make it a good one.
Trying to find... I think we're basically almost out.
Okay, that's good. So
St. Louis, what should the team name be?
Oh.
How weird should they get? Should they go XFL weird? The DC Defenders?
No.
Seattle Dragons? No.
Oh, what was the, they had one really dumb one like Nighthawks or something, yeah. Or something weird.
Might have been St. Louis, actually. St. Louis has an XFL team.
Yeah, Battlehawks.
Battlehawks.
That's horrendous. Yeah. You got to beat Battlehawks. You got to be better than
someone's
that.
The Roughnecks. And
stealing the Tulsa Roughnecks.
Yeah, that's a USFL name.
No, that's an old NASL name.
Well, that too.
The Tulsa Roughnecks.
You think it's Sacramento, Charlotte, the next ones?
I think so.
I think Charlotte for sure. Sacramento.
Interesting note in the SA article. Charlotte wants in 2021.
Yeah.
They want in like now. They don't want to wait.
They're ready to go. They have a stadium.
Sacramento is like, 2022. That's
cool. Yeah, and Sacramento seems to be losing momentum to me.
They struggled on the money. The money's gone up. They're struggling.
Miami with a certain
they'll be fine. That was already news. That was already known. Like, it was like, oh, wow, there's stuff on the ground there. They already knew that. They've been playing golf there, by the way, and they had a kids' golf program. I don't think it was that bad. But any development that you're going to do there is going to require heavy-duty remediation, and they knew that.
Yeah.
I think it's $50 million now is what they're talking about. But here's the flip side. If you're the city of Miami, is anybody else going to want to buy that property and develop it?
As far as the name of the St. Louis team is concerned, I know this sounds silly because it's going against the recent trend. I would actually like to see it not be FC St. Louis or St. Louis United or Inter St. Louis or Athletic St. Louis or whatever. I would
Athletic
like
Athletic maybe because it hasn't been done, but you have.
You know what I'm talking about. I wouldn't mind seeing it being something like. You know what would be really funny? The St. Louis Rams.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, my God.
They can do it. I think they can do it.
I don't know if they're going to pull
it.
Well, Kroenke would be the one who'd be fighting.
Right, no, that would be the funny thing. Like, you want to send an early shot.
Yeah, sure, all right.
How about the Houston Roughnecks?
That's the...
In XFL, okay. Yeah.
Tulsa's furious, by the way.
Tampa Bay Vipers.
No, but seriously, I would like to see something in that vein. You know, the St. Louis Stampede or, I don't know.
Athletic, I'm not as against because we haven't seen one. Somebody suggested on soccer down here Olympic because they are an Olympic city.
That is true.
So you could go down that road.
The only challenge they would have with Athletic is Sporting Kansas City across the state might say that's a little too close. They wouldn't care.
Yeah, they couldn't fight it. But then you got two very similar.
Right.
The other one that I read on St. Louis Post-Dispatch when they were going through possible team names, and I didn't know a whole lot about St. Louis's history. The city was named for a former king, and somebody suggested the St. Louis Kings. And that's an easy, simple one.
It is.
That you could do some stuff with. They can't do Real St. Louis, obviously, because then it'd be two RSLs.
Right.
So
no, that's
can't
good point.
That.
That's
but good. St. Louis Kings?
One other thing to keep in mind, too, about St. Louis, the oldest Mardi Gras in this country is not New Orleans or Mobile. It's in St. Louis. So there might be a little bit of a Mardi Gras hook that you can put into it as well. So we'll see. I'm glad they're in the league. It's a good soccer market, a lot of history there. Quite frankly, I'm surprised it's taken this long, but I'm glad they're in the league.
All about the money.
Yes. Okay. 7:30 Friday night, Five Stripes Countdown from Orlando. 8 o'clock kickoff. Tuesday night, we'll see what we can do. We don't know yet what our coverage plans will be for the U.S. Open Cup final. Hopefully we can do something. It's a little bit out of our hands, but we're going to try to do something. But we can tell you for sure, Friday night, 7:30 on 92.9 The Game, radio.com, and the Atlanta United app, as it will be the third Father's Day of this year, we hope. Actually, the fourth, I guess, because there was the real Father's Day and then the Father's Day at the Benz and Father's Day 2 weeks ago. Too. I don't get it.
You didn't see the Instagram, like... The mom, like...
I missed this.
Julian Gressel, yeah, on this Instagram.
Okay. Well, on to Instagram we go. Hopefully we'll be talking about another trophy when we see you next on Stoppage Time. It'll be a week from today at 2 p.m. Stoppage Time brought to you by Aaron's. Easy, beautiful, affordable, top brands in furniture, electronics, and appliances. Your credit isn't the best. That's okay. Get started at Aaron's.com or one of 47 Atlanta stores. For Jason Longshore, Jimmy Vance, I'm Mike Conti. Thanks for joining us for Stoppage Time.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.